everyone, I'm Louis Vargas, and you're listening to Episode 9 of the Art Scene Podcast. Before I introduce my guest, I just want to remind you all again to be sure to visit the podcast website at artscenepc.com, where you'll find past episodes of the show and photos of my guests and their work. So this week's guest is Tom Raciel, an artist here in the Bay Area who makes large, bright, beautifully constructed neon color sculptures. I had the pleasure of hanging out with her in her studio in Oakland, where I got to see all of the various materials she works with. Then we were able to talk for a bit, not only about her origins as an artist and how it's like to make large-scale work, but her interest in film as well. And now, here's our conversation. Hey, Tamara, it's nice to see you again.
So good to see you, Louis.
Yeah, and thanks for having me at your studio here.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is you mentioned that it was going to be like Willy Wonka's factory. You're right.
I think so. And like only a certain amount of people are allowed in per year. And not everybody leaves.
Right. Yeah. You mentioned that and I was very curious. I'm like, I wonder what it will look like. And I walked to the door and I saw like, oh, this is a lot of pink, a lot of red.
Like hypercolor.
Yeah. So I think you graduated a year before I did.
Oh.
But you graduated in 2013, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I graduated in 2014 from SFAI, but I haven't seen you since then. Your work was amazing. And then afterwards, I think I kind of just thought I didn't know what happened to you, basically. And I think you popped up because a coworker of mine at the Academy said that she was doing that joint show with you. She had done painting, her Maisha.
Yes.
And then I was like, oh, so Tamara's still around.
Yes.
So, yes. But yeah, but what have you been up to?
Well, like, I graduated 3 years ago, and I kind of hit the ground running. Since then, I've been pretty much showing steadily and trying to figure it all out, trying to figure out, like, what the dealio is, like, with the money and with the locations. Like, for example, I want to get my work to L.A. and New York. I just had a visitor from New York, and I have an L.A. person interested. So I'm trying to kind of, like, spread my work out. And I'm also trying to figure out, like, the money aspect.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking public art.
Yeah.
So I've been writing, like, some public art commissions and seeing where I'll land with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why public art? What is it about it? It's just because of the funding that's available to you? Or
I think my work would translate really well into kind of monolithic take over space kind of work, you know, and I think it's somewhat playful, and also there's stories around my work, and I think people, you know, would resonate with it in the public sphere. Wow. Yeah, and also, you know, like, at some point, I really need to get paid.
We all want to just get paid.
Exactly. I think that's what it kind of boils down to.
Yeah.
Without, you know, like, selling your soul. Which is, you know, I wanted to say, I was thinking about this, and I just think it's like, I'm seeing this trend recently where people are commercializing their work, like, even while they're still in grad school, and rather than, like, fully experimenting and creating, like, a serious practice, which is what most people, as we know, go to grad school for, is to, you know, explore, you know, do exploratory work and experimentation. And I guess I'm just seeing, like, a lot of people come right out of school, and they're, I guess, because of the money element, they just completely have commercialized the work. And I feel sad about that, because I've known, like, a lot of really amazing artists, and I'm like, why aren't you doing your, like, real, you know, your real work, your deeper work?
So your work is really unique in that. And yeah, I saw it. I love it, though.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. You know, there it's very fluorescent.
Yes.
Very neon. Yes. Very bright.
Yes.
And big.
Yes.
Which is, and yeah, and you get pretty innovative with it, like, in terms of how you install it and exhibit it. What made you go into that type of work? Like, I guess, where did art making start for you?
That's a great question, Louis. Let's see. It started when I was really little, and I was obsessed with, like, science fiction and monsters. And I used to like draw all the time. And I also had this really strange, like underneath our house, we called it the jailhouse.
Yeah.
It was like this like shed, and but light came through the slats. And I would make these kind of like wild, colorful potions all the time. I had like almost like a science lab down there. And so that's kind of, I think, where my sculpture started a little bit. Then I moved into photography when I was in school. I was like the school photographer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I was too.
Were you too?
Yeah,
that's
totally.
So,
yeah.
That's so great. And yeah. Did you go to boarding school?
Oh, not at all. No. I went to public school.
Yes. Yeah. I was actually, I went to boarding school. Of course, I got expelled from boarding school.
Where was this boarding school at?
I went to Miss Hall School in the Berkshires.
Well, where's that at?
It's in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Like, oh, it's wow. In this really beautiful area, right. But...
And you grew up in Massachusetts.
I did grow up in Massachusetts, okay. Yes. And so, yeah, I was a photographer first. Well, I guess I drew a lot, then a photographer. And then I went to the Museum School of Fine Arts when I was a bit younger, and I was a painter, primarily.
Wow.
And I loved painting. I mean, painting is... For me, it's like you're kind of just like kind of channeling, you know, energy. And it's just like you're so embodied when you're doing it. And it's so textural and sensuous. And so I loved painting, but I guess everybody kept saying, your work is kind of coming off the wall. Maybe you should try. Like, right, it's kind of, again, taking it, like, you know, moving into space.
Yeah.
So why don't you try some sculpture?
Yeah.
Yes.
And how did you make the transition from, so it sounds like you started with photo, then you went to painting.
Yes.
Were you just always a good painter, even when you were doing photo, and it was just kind of something that came natural to you to, like, make that shift to painting, or?
I had some really amazing teachers. I had this one class where... you could choose any painting, like from a famous painter, and the teacher, Domingo Barreras, would show us how to like break it down piece by piece and get that same effect, mm-hmm. of course, with our own narrative. And I was just like, yeah, it was like amazing. And I just painted all day and all night. And I guess it was good. I guess I was good. People weren't as into my paintings as they are my sculptures.
Yeah.
I have to say.
And then after you went to that school again, so then where did you go to next?
The museum school. So then I took off to Hawaii. I lived there for 5 years, and I had this kind of dream. Have you been to Hawaii, by the way?
When I was little, but nothing. Yes. I have no memory as an adult.
Okay, yes.
But it's on my list.
Oh, it's so beautiful. It's really beautiful and very romantic and kind of like California. There's like a lot of myths about Hawaii, and some of them are true and some are not true. I moved there and I thought I was going to kind of like meet a surfer boy. Because I was a little obsessed with surfing magazines back east. And I was like, oh my God, I just want to like go meet a surfer boy and hang out on the beach and then like make my art.
Yeah.
And I moved there and it was so expensive, kind of like California is now. Mm-hmm. It was like outrageously expensive to live there. So I had to work like 60-hour weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like totally not what I anticipated.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
When did you move back to the mainland?
So I lived there for 5 years, and then this was a while ago, like 10 years ago maybe, and then at a certain point I started taking classes. Actually, I was planning to go to CCA, but they lost my admissions material.
Wow.
So at the last minute, I was like, maybe this isn't the school for me. And I applied to SFAI, and I ended up getting into both of them, and I ended up choosing SFAI over CCA.
And yeah,
although
and
the, I took classes at CCA.
And this is for your MFA or for...
I did some undergrad work first. I hadn't, you know, been in school for a long time, and I wanted to, you know, study some sculpture.
Yeah.
Yeah, first, before I was like, I didn't actually even think about my MFA.
Yeah. Well, when you were in Hawaii, were you still making art?
Okay, so here's the thing. I rented this apartment. I had this cool garage. I had every intention, but it was so hard to make the living that I would just come home and I'd be DOA. I'd just be like, I cannot, you know. Yeah, I was working all the time.
So that's I guess makes sense why you wanted to take some undergrad classes, I guess, right? To kind of familiarize yourself with making sculptures.
That's a good point. I did. And be like, is this something I really want to pursue?
Yeah.
Or it will just be, you know, a hobby.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because art can always be like a good hobby.
Yes, that's true.
Right?
Yeah. So, you're taking these undergrad classes, and when do you decide, okay, I'm ready for my MFA? Did you get real deep into making art, or was it like a certain person that was kind of encouraging you to go get your MFA and take it to that next level, or, because you were making art even way before you got to, getting your MFA at SFAI?
A couple of years. And, I also took some digital filmmaking at Berkeley City College because it was so inexpensive.
Yeah.
It was like virtually nothing. You know, you can go to these great schools here for almost free, you know, public schools in California. So I took some of that and I was like, I'm really not a full-on filmmaker, even though I integrate that sometimes in my work. So I ended up studying with Terry Friedman at CCA Sculpture and John Roloff at SFAI and Alan D'Souza. I took a new genres class and Sharon, I forget the new genres teacher. I forget her name, Sharon. I can't remember. But they were amazing, and all of them. And I just was like, you know, it came back to me after the initial, like, monster I created. Yeah. I created this, like, hideous, the most hideous sculpture, like, probably that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It was really bad, but I brought it in for critique anyways.
Yeah.
And but something happened like right after that. It was weird. It was like somehow my vision and my skill set and everything kind of came back to me fairly quickly. And I was like, wow, I'm onto something. I think I'll follow this. And at one point I was like, everybody's getting their MFA here and I'm making kind of the same level or similar level of work to the people who are getting their MFA. Why don't I spend my money a little bit more wisely, maybe, and do that? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whatever happened to that hideous sculpture?
Oh my God. I kind of wish I never photographed it even.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I just kind of tore into it and I was like, you gotta go, my monster.
Right. Like releasing your demons, right?
Just right.
Like looking at your work recently, you mentioned you incorporate photo. Mm. Was that always the case when you went into sculpturing that you wanted to, you felt like you, at one point, you wanted to incorporate your other disciplines that you knew how to do into your sculpture work? Or did that just come later on?
You know, I think because of the new genres work classes I was engaged in, I realized that you can just, you know, whatever the project calls for.
Yeah.
I think that's what I love, right?
Yeah.
The genres, like, it's great that way because it's like, oh, well, I need to create a meal to do some social practice. I need to do some photography, you know, to further the, you know, message of my work. So I just ended up often photographing the sculpture, and that would turn into a whole nother work in and of itself. And so it was kind of like this 2D, 3D, 2D, and then sometimes back into 3D or vice versa. It's like they're all, it kind of works circularly.
Yeah. 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 Cause I was reading on your
bio. Yeah. So, you know, and one of the things, no, I wrote it down because I thought it was an interesting description of your work. He said that your work extrapolates iconic two-dimensional imagery from cinema and three-dimensional images from cinema into this three-dimensional phenomenological, it's a big word.
It is a big word.
Experience.
Yes.
And it was like a lot of big words.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Very specific to what you're going for. Can you explain a little bit like for me?
Right. You can see like our MFA, influences.
Right. Yeah.
In my state. Right?
Yes.
Let's see. I'm a cinephile. Mm-hmm. And so is my partner, my mateling, i.e. my husband, i.e. my assistant. So he helps me sometimes just, you know, install. but anyways, we go to the Palm Springs Film Festival, example, every year. Yeah. And we watch like 17 like international films, sometimes that you'll never see anywhere else.
Yeah.
And like in 7 days, for example, like all day long. And I go to a lot of film festivals, and I look at films, particularly science fiction films. And one day I really had this epiphany that what I was so drawn to in science fiction films is the fact that there's like so many sculptural objects in the film. And like take 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah.
Right, that's a good example. Mm-hmm. The monolith, mm-hmm. and the spaceship and the psychedelic experience at the end. Well, I guess that's, but you're kind of like that sculpture like moving through space. And yeah, there's so many. I mean, I could get into so many examples. The Demon Seed is an amazing one with Julie Christie, and there's so many sculptural objects in that film, and they're all like layered with symbolism and so on and so forth. And so I always go, I look at these films, and then I take what's on the screen as inspiration, a lot of times as a starting point, and I'm like, what about that sculpture am I fascinated by? Is it the fluorescent color? Is it the mesmerizing quality? Is it the spiritual quality?
Yeah.
And I extrapolate, and then I kind of use aspects of that while still, you know, keep, you know, like making something new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you, so obviously cinema is a big influence on your work.
It is.
Is there any specific artist that you looked at as inspiration or as an influence, or somebody that you looked at and you're like, that's kind of what I like, that's what I like to do, but I want to take it a next step further?
I do. I love that. I don't know, did you see that show a few years back? It was at SF MoMA. And it was Douglas Gordon. It was an amazing show, but he's a filmmaker, does performance, and then he had like something like 48 televisions, I believe, set up at SF MoMA in this one room, and they were like from famous films, and they were all playing simultaneously, and I guess it was just like this kind of really immersive experience.
I think it was before I moved up here.
I think you would have liked that one. Yeah, it was really powerful.
Yeah, what about like James Turrell? Because that's another one that does like, I mean, very similar colors, works with light. Not so much as sculptural as you, but like, there's so many. I mean, we took that LA, I think the class we took together at SFAI was the history of LA, and we covered the Ferris Gallery artists in the LA that kind of started that whole like 1950s, 60s era art scene. And
the Finnish fetish.
Yeah.
I loved our class. He introduced us to so many fascinating artists and ways of looking at the art world and trajectories. Yeah, it was amazing.
And a lot of your work seems kind of part, like it seems like inspired from that time period, but you didn't really like come from LA, you come from the East Coast. Naturally, you went towards this style that seems very similar to that Southern California art style.
I think so. I didn't even really know about the Finnish fetish and the light and space people.
Yeah.
But I just started kind of working in that style.
Yeah.
And then when we were in that class, it was like, oh, like I had this aha moment.
Yeah.
Everything kind of fell into place. And I was like, that's where I fit in. I think maybe my work is different. I don't know if you remember Hu Han Ru from our school.
Yeah, he was he originally was the head of the, and I think he created it, the Exhibition Museum Studies Program at SFAI.
Yeah.
And then he left, I think, a semester before I came into the school, but yeah.
I ended up somehow, I wasn't supposed to, but getting him on my first year review.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it was really amazing. And he came into my space and he said some incredible things to me. And one of the things he said is, your work is like minimalism with a narrative.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Which I can kind of see, because especially when you really love movies and you know, the whole purpose, it's a narrative.
It is. Yeah. It's a story. It's right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. The story. So the story for me is always like, there's like the minimal, I kind of have a minimalist aesthetic. When he said that, I just was like, oh, thank you so much. But yeah, I think I have a very kind of a minimalist and then a Finnish fetish, like a combination aesthetic, but then I'm always trying to tell a story.
Yeah.
And I'm interested, you know, because I think, yeah, I want to tell a story with the work.
What do you, you know, I'm always curious because your work is big, you know, and you mentioned about one of the motivations for probably going into doing public art was there's a little bit more funding in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which
yes.
you need for your work and the type of the size that it is and the yes. type of materials you use. Right now, do you make work full time, or do you have another job that you do aside from this? Because, you know, as most of these days, you know, some artists teach, some artists like work somewhere else.
I think I'm going to have to get a job like really soon.
Yeah.
But I don't because I'm almost at a negative balance.
Yeah.
But this time when I went back to school, I had savings.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I decided to do it differently, because I remembered the first time about how much I struggled.
Yeah.
And it's interesting you say that, because I see that's the other reason I feel really sad for a lot of my contemporaries that I went to school with, is like a lot of them got right out of school
yeah.
and were just like, I can't do that, you know, kind of work anymore,
right.
if anything, you know. And this time I just said, that's not going to happen to me. I'm going to...
Yeah.
You know, have a backup plan.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, you mentioned earlier about teaching. Is that something you wanted to do or see yourself doing?
I do see myself doing that. I've done some high school teaching and younger children before, and I really resonated with that.
Yeah.
And the thing about teaching is I feel like you end up giving so much.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you taught before?
No, not at all.
I could see you as a teacher, though.
Yeah,
yeah, I could see you.
I've thought about
yes.
it. I haven't fully committed myself to trying
yeah.
to see if I can teach a class here or there.
I think you'd be really good, because you seem really good with people and just very, yeah, and
thanks.
Into the educational aspect of things. I think you'd be great.
Thanks. I try. I try to be
yeah.
good with people.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
yeah, we all we have to make an effort.
Yeah.
oh, my God. Sometimes I'm just like, just get me back to my objects.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to do a show someday that's called The Object is Everything. But I do like people's stories.
Yes. That's mostly yeah. why I did this podcast. Was I really love people's stories of like, how did they got from A to B?
I love the stories. I love people's stories, and I kind of like even drama, you know. And I think if you're in the art world, you have to be kind of up for some drama.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it's pretty intense. It's very cliquish.
Yeah.
I won't say art mafia. I'll just say cliquish.
No,
I'm trying to be tactful.
Yeah, and it can, you know,
Yeah.
In episode two, which I interviewed Emily Reynolds, who also went to SFAI, mm-hmm. and she touched on that a little bit when she was talking about why there was, like, people in L.A. only hung out with people in L.A. And the artists mm-hmm. that are from San Francisco and San Francisco, like, why? That there should be more of this cross-pollination, and hopefully it happens more, because then, you know, it just only makes the work better. Like, you know, the more, like, an exchange of ideas and styles, you know, from different cities and different places in the country, you know, because, you know, as we know, notoriously East Coast art always thinks it's better than West Coast art, you know.
Absolutely.
And so, like, but the question is, why not meet in the middle somehow and exchange ideas? And, you know, I say that in reference to you saying that it could be clicky sometimes. And sometimes, yeah, it could be, like, a little bit, like, oh, no, oh, you're San Diego art. Oh, no, you're L.A. art. And it's different from what we do. But at the end of the day, we're all making art. Yeah, and San Francisco is right now it's a crazy time period, I think, for San Francisco, because especially with the rent going up, I think there's still a struggle for tech to be a lot more involved mm-hmm. in the art world. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. You're right. Drama does exist in the art world.
Drama exists, and it really does exist, and it's fascinating. It's like when I have meditated, you know, enough that week, then I can be kind of detached and just kind of fascinated by all of the dramatic scenarios that are unfolding. Sometimes that, you know, that I'm privy to, because if you apply to things, you become privy to you know, kind of the background and the history and of relationships and so on and so forth. And I don't know, it's like, it's difficult, but as I said, some days it's fascinating and some days I'm just like, oh my God, you know, I haven't socialized enough, I haven't networked enough, you know, I'm not hooked in enough, I'm not young enough. You know, there's always like something that you're not enough of. Mm-hmm. And those things can play out in your consciousness. And I think then you have to go back to meditating, you know. Yeah. And I do think it's important to have, for me at least, to have a spiritual practice. And also, I like, you know, you were saying you have a girlfriend and, you know, it sounds like you have like a full life. To have other things, and that you're not completely, the art world isn't the only thing that you think about 24/7.
Yeah.
Because it can kind of drive you crazy.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
You know, when I was in grad school, I was so 24/7 was all about art.
Yes.
Reading about it, analyzing it, reading about people who analyze it.
Yes.
And there were days where I was like, I'm going to lose my mind. And I'm a huge sports fan.
So good.
And what I would do was I would listen to sports podcasts, just like a podcast randomly from New York City, the most New York people just ranting about their sports. But it was such a palate cleanser for me. And I kid you not, I would listen to it on my way to school and on my way back from school, because it was the one way to kind of like, we just talked about Foucault today. We just talked about like someone's work today. You know, we just talked about what's going on with the drama at SFMOMA or whatever museum.
Yes.
And like,
yes.
And so I sometimes, you know, I needed something to kind of just cleanse it a little bit. And
oh yeah, no, it's. I think that's so beneficial.
Yeah.
That you have some things that you and that you love, right, that you know, that really kind of nurture you.
Yeah.
And outside of the art world.
Yeah. Well, aside from meditating, what's yours? What other stuff do you do?
Well, of course, film.
Right.
So I go to like, you know, lots and lots of film festivals, and you know, and then My cat did unfortunately passed away last summer, but he was really kind of like the love of my animal, you know, animal relationship life.
Right.
And I used to call him my lover. and so I want to get like animals so fulfill me. And like sometimes I'm like, I just want to quit the art world and go work with animals. Like sometimes I wish I'd become a vet. or something like that. Yeah. And but I'm going to get this year, hopefully, a dog and a cat. Oh, and I'm going to get them to, you know, I'll rescue a kitty. Yeah. I kind of want a Shibu Inu. So, because they're so mischievous. Yeah. And they smirk at you all day long. but yeah, animals, I would say. Yeah, that's a big thing for me. And hiking, because, you know, the Bay Area, like, yeah. we you know, I hike a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Film is such a big part of your life.
Really?
Like, have you ever incorporated film into your work?
Yeah, I have on, I only have a 4-minute, maybe less than 4-minute excerpt on my website, and it's based on the after image work, Future Color. The rods and then the photographs and then the evolution of that was it's like a 45-minute film,
yeah,
of the shape-shifting, mind-altering, you know, ever-changing rod images in every imaginable, like, fluorescent color. And it's pretty phenomenal. And I feel like that's, you know, I'm looking for a space because I haven't installed it yet. I want to build, I want to do sculpture video.
Yeah.
So I would like an immersive space. I'll build, like, kind of a sculpture, and then people will kind of, you know, zone into the 45-minute Future Color 3, it's called.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's kind of trippy. And it's really, speaking of after images, it really changes the way you see because of the color experience. It's like you literally don't know any longer if you're seeing the image or you're seeing something completely different. And it's very trippy.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the big film. I worked on that like for a year.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty. I think it's pretty monumental.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of, do you have any shows coming up?
I do have a couple of shows coming up. I'm in. I love Glenn Helfand. He's an amazing curator, writer, and teacher in the Bay Area. I'm in the show After Pop Life. And it will be at Minnesota Street Project.
Oh, nice. That's great.
It will be in September. And it's a group show, and it's based on kind of an homage to Prince.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, so that's kind of a non-paid commissioned work. I'll say that I get commissioned quite a bit these days, but nobody seems to want to pay me. So it's kind of like,
right.
I guess, can you call it commission then?
Yeah. That's a good point, right?
Yeah, right?
Right.
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, what would you call? Like, right?
You're right. I don't think it could be called commissioned work, at least at that point, right? It'd be
right?
Non-commissioned work.
Right.
A favor.
a big favor.
Right.
A six by seven foot favor.
Right.
And
right.
Then the next show is in January. I'm very excited about this. Someone recommended me, and it's in Palo Alto Art Center.
Yeah.
And I'm going to show two major sculptures.
Yeah.
My 9.5 feet in diameter color wheel.
Oh, wow.
That I made at SFAI that has 250 pounds of colored sand in it.
Oh, yes. I remember.
Right? So, and, you know, I've never shown that except at SFAI.
Wow.
So I'm very, they were like, they saw it on my website, and they were like, that's what we want. And I was like, wow, I've been dying to show it. And then also another quote-unquote commissioned work, a 10, almost 11 feet in diameter color wheel that will be CNC'd aluminum with, it's a giant color wheel with acrylic inserts.
Wow.
And that will be casting... you know, that would be creating projections,
yeah,
in the gallery. So I'll have two big works in that.
One thing I wanted to ask you before we wrap it up.
Yes.
And it's always on my mind every time I see your work.
Yeah, tell me.
How in the world do you make the work? I like actually physically, I, you know, there's, yes, some work where, you know, when you see a photograph, you see a painting, all right, they use paint,
yes,
they use chemicals, they,
yes,
or they use digital camera. You work with acrylic, and and varied colors and varied different materials. The rods you make, I'm always so curious, like, where do you make these and how do you make them?
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Everybody wants to know my quote-unquote secrets.
Yeah.
They're not really secrets, but I can tell you, well, okay, so, you know, as a sculptor, I kind of, like, caught on to this in school working with John Roloff, who's, you know, made massive, you know, public art and all, and there's no way you can learn in painting. You can learn like pretty much all the techniques in a year or two, you know, maybe several years, and then keep learning a little here and there. But with sculpture, there's no way you can be like master. You can't have mastery over every material.
Mm-hmm.
It would take like lifetimes.
Yeah.
So there's an amazing book that I think you would be interested in called The Art of Not Making. And it's really fascinating. And it's all about like famous artists who have their work fabricated.
Wow.
Yeah. And it kind of demystifies a lot, you know, most of it's sculpture, of course. And it demystifies like the making of sculpture.
Yeah.
So a lot of my work is, you know, I use so many different techniques. I've used gun drilling, which, like, who knew, right?
Yeah.
Like, I had to, like, go from place to place to place to place till finally I was like, how am I going to do this? And they were like, you have to go to a gun driller.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah.
So some of my stuff is 3D printed. Some of it's gun drilled. Some of it I resin cast myself.
Yeah.
Some of it's powder coated. Some of it's found objects.
Yeah.
And so it kind of like goes on. And I will add that my goal as kind of sculptor, installation artist is to kind of like, you know, work with every material.
Yeah.
So like I'm kind of covering, I feel like I've kind of covered a lot of ground in the last few years.
Oh yeah, I see purple turf over here.
Yeah.
I see a shag carpet over here. You know, yeah, I mean, you're on your way.
Boulders, there's some boulders.
Yeah, you're on your way.
Yeah, 1950s television that I have to have rewired. That thing is so radical.
Yeah. Yeah, so a lot of the work you have to go out to go get it fabricated, or if not, you make it yourself, but I'm assuming you go to some other facilities that you go do it yourself.
I do. I sometimes like work closely with someone if I don't know how to make it myself, and sometimes I'll like hire somebody to like work with me because I actually want to. Like I just saw the Eva Hesse documentary the other day, and she had her fabricator sleeping with her. She was like having, you know, she like meets this guy and she's like, want to move in. And they were like, I guess, lovers. And he lived with her like for 2 years and he was her fabricator.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's how she did like her later. Like it wasn't like she became like a plastic fabricator overnight.
Right.
But she wanted to put her own hands in to the work. So sometimes I want to work side by side with someone.
Yeah.
So I'll find someone, like I'll either do an exchange or sometimes, you know, work a deal out. And sometimes I just, you know, plain old, like, you know, farm it out.
And why acrylic? Why plastic?
It's so lab. It's like the whole essence of it's sort of like science fiction.
Which
it's
is,
like, right?
Yeah.
It's like,
which you always seem to be interested in. It seems like you've always liked science fiction, right?
I have always liked science fiction.
Well, thank you for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it. I enjoy talking to you. You're funny, by the way.
You are really funny. I could talk to, like, and you're so gregarious. I could talk to you, like, for really, like, for hours.
Thanks.
It's so fun. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, no problem. And again, when's the show coming on again at the Minnesota Street Project?
That would be, I think it's opening September 14th.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. And what gallery is it in?
I guess that there's two galleries, that it's a group show, and so, like, I guess we're taking, I'm not sure exactly.
Like, which one?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, thanks.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
As you can hear, I had a blast hanging out with Tamra, and I want to thank her again for inviting me over to her studio to chat. Be sure to visit the website at artscenepc.com to see some more of her work, or if you're in the Bay Area, come see her work yourself in the After Pop Life show at the Minnesota Street Project, which closes soon October 1st, so hurry. Lastly, be sure to follow the podcast on either Twitter or Instagram at artscenepc. All right, till next time, everyone.